Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Patrick Mooney and Sahadev Sharma, here to talk Cubs and former Cubs on to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. And as my little teaser there alludes, the perhaps biggest story, and I mean, I don't want to be so bold and say the entire sporting world, because maybe we're in a little bit of a baseball bubble, but boy, it got a lot of attention, and justifiably so. And who's going to give me the thumbs down for this this discussion? So we got to talk about, I don't know, who wants to set it up? I'm curious, because I know how I would set up like sort of the background and the story and stuff, but I kind of want one of you guys to do it, because I'm curious how you frame the discussion, and then I want to react to it. So well, someone explain what we're talking about.
So, what, the last 2-3 weeks now, the Mets, whenever they have a reason to celebrate, you know, which is basically any hit, that's how the teams always come up with those random celebrations when they get on base. They've been doing a thumbs down action, and it turns out that someone was finally asked, Javi Baez was finally asked about it a couple days ago, and it turns out that that's their response to being booed. They've been booed, and now they're giving it back to the Mets fans, booing them for when they do something well. And Javi, I saw that whole section of the post game, I believe it was, and he was asked a few follow-ups. Yes, it sounds like he came up with it according to the follow-ups that I saw, and it's kind of he talked about how he doesn't like being booed. It puts him in a bad frame of mind, essentially, and it led to this plan to boo the fans back with that sign, which I mean, I'll initially react to it and like, listen, I get frustrated by fans. Fan reaction to things, the way fans talk about players sometimes I feel is a little harsh, but I also get that fans have a different perspective than media, and sometimes you just get so passionate about things. So I'm not going to tell fans how to fan, and I think booing is acceptable, even though I'm not a huge proponent of booing. So my initial reaction was like, okay, fine, whatever. Javi and the Mets want to give it back to the fans in some way, but really, like, that should not come out. That's the ultimate response for me. Like, Javi knows better than to say that to the media and get that out there. They want to do their thing, come up with a reason, come up with something else with the when the media asks about it, or just say, you know, that's our little personal thing, we're going to keep that in house. It wouldn't be the first time that that's happened. But Javi obviously wanted to kind of vent there in his own way. He didn't sound angry or anything. It was kind of typical Javi, the way he talks to the media. But I'm a little surprised that he came out with it. But sometimes Javi's honest to his own detriment.
I mean, this is what happens when the Cubs leave their protective bubble. I think John Greenberg had a good tweet of like, you know, wear our obvious shirts saying how great we are all the time. And I thought that was kind of funny because it is the culture that the Cubs created. And it was, in a lot of ways, great. I think the Cubs got, you know, an absolute best case scenario when they drafted Javier Baez. But, you know, I think, you know, this is kind of the jarring part of as these guys leave Wrigley, and you know the fans are demanding and it's a passionate market, but you know it is different in a lot of ways in that, you know, Javi through his own hard work and personality engendered a ton of goodwill, deservedly so. But once you kind of leave here and go to a place where like your image isn't on like all these billboards around the stadium, and you know, seemingly every third person in the crowd isn't wearing your jersey, and like they don't remember where they were when the Cubs won the 2016 World Series, it's like, yeah, this is kind of the reality that you have to deal with. And Javi, as Sahadev said, is pretty honest, but the Cubs also never really like forced him to do a lot of media stuff. Like, he was a guy who kind of, you know, showed up did his own routine, you know, wasn't always at his locker back when we could have access to players in the clubhouse. And, you know, I like the fact that he was just honest. I mean, he was picking a really dumb battle, like in New York, against Mets fans who are, you know, give them this, are super passionate and, you know, are knowledgeable and know a lot about their team. And, you know, I don't think it was this like crime against baseball. Like, we're going to, I mean, the Mets are going to do something else dumb in a couple of days, and we're all going to basically forget about this. I mean, Brett, you pulled out on Bleacher Nation, pulled out the whole raccoon possum thing. If you could explain that one, but like something else, LOL Mets is going to happen. Javi will probably come back to the Cubs. It'll be this like very random footnote. It's really Francisco Lindor's problem because he's there for the next, whatever, 10 years.
Yeah, that's a good summation of everything there. And I appreciate you mentioning Lindor at the end there, because not only is he the one who's going to have to wear this for longer, it's also, we haven't really heard from him yet. And it wasn't like Javi was throwing anyone else under the bus saying, hey, you know, we're all doing this. He was just answering the question about what does this, you know, sign mean that he, and video has showed Lindor doing it, Kevin Pillar doing it. So, you know, for whatever it's worth, my reactions to it, a little more homery, fan protective of Javi Baez, you know, admittedly. And I can't say that my reaction isn't totally colored by that perspective. Like, maybe if this were happening with another player who had just come to the Cubs in a trade and they were then suffering through just, you know, a hellacious period of losing, maybe I would be more frustrated and yada, yada, yada. You know, first of all, I thought it was hilarious. And that's because we're at a distance now. So like, it's rare that I get to just sort of laugh about a situation that has a tethered connection to the Cubs, but that doesn't affect the Cubs in any way. I'm not going to get in any trouble for saying the wrong thing. I'm not going to get yelled at by anyone because I'm making jokes all night long about raccoons and about Mr. Met flicking off the fans and all these things. So I really enjoyed it from that perspective. I thought, like you guys, I was surprised he admitted to it publicly. I thought the Mets organizational reaction to it was completely unnecessary. So, you know, they issue a statement from team president Sandy Alderson that was like the most obsequious, we love the fans, we would never do anything to hurt the fans. How dare our players say anything that would offend our intelligent, thoughtful, kind fan base. Give me a break. The very fan base that's doing the booing, you think they're going to be placated by this statement? Are you crazy? Get out of here. And then Steve Cohen, he gave a statement to the Post. It was basically the same kind of thing, except dropping in a third rail reference where, like, come on, most of us are like doing the Googling. What does he mean? Third rail? Oh. I thought that was just, it's ridiculous. Same guy who's tweeting out criticisms of his own players 2 weeks ago, not so unclearly referencing Javi Baez in that stuff. And it's like, geez, way to just turn a situation that didn't have to be much more than, he shouldn't have said anything, into a 3-day, you know, lull fest. So I do appreciate, you know, thanks, by the way, for doing that, because it definitely gave me some stuff to work with. Ultimately, I think we can say more about that if we want. I would say I appreciated the humanness in it. I appreciated the directness in the response. And I think probably lots of teams and players have made little private moment jabs at the fans. I'm sure they've been pissed off before too. And just Javi was the one who said it out loud. So like, take it easy. Fans that are out there booing like crazy, they can take it. Just like we say the players can take it, the fans can take a little thumbs down. Okay, it's not going to hurt you. It's not going to bite you. There. That's Brett, that on that.
I think you kind of nailed it when you said like you're going to be a homer on this, and you know, if it was a new guy coming into town in Chicago, you may react differently. The Mets fans don't have the history with Javi. I mean, Javi is a hero for the Cubs, for most Cubs fans, right? Like, he 2016 he NLCS MVP, co-MVP, he had a huge NLDS. a big homer in Game 7. He's a huge part of Cubs fans' history and what, you know, the success, the recent success, and they have a history with him. They've seen so much good from him. They understand the good and the bad. I find it really funny that people are all of a sudden figuring out that Javi Baez strikes out a lot and he doesn't walk much. Like, I'm seeing all these tweets like, this is breaking news. Yeah, thank you. What did Mets people, did they not look at what he does? Do they not know who Javier Baez is and where he brings value? Like, that boggles my mind when I see people suddenly bringing this stuff up. Like, it's like, did you know Javi Baez chases pitches and sometimes looks really bad when he swings? Wow. It's like New York. Something comes to New York and now it's new and it has actually happened. Until it comes to New York, it doesn't actually happen in real life. Like,
well,
that,
in fairness,
that's annoyed me. Yeah.
Previously, it was happening in the tiny little hamlet of Chicago.
Right.
Where very few people have seen any of this stuff occurring.
I mean, we know who Javier Baez is. Like, come on. Just like, take the good with the bad and understand how he provides value and how he doesn't.
Like, reading between the lines here, I do wonder just kind of what's going on with Javi. Like, when David Ross pulled him from that game for that base running gaffe, whether it was forgetting how many outs there were, Ross seemed to kind of allude to it, that it wasn't just that moment. It was kind of a culmination, or at least a manager wouldn't just do that for a one-off. And Javi had a similar mistake, I believe, with the Mets the other day. And just, I don't know, having known Javi for a while and talked to, like, Sahadev, a lot of people who've worked with him over the years. I mean, there's one thing about Javi Baez, it was that he does not care at all what you think about him. That has been his day-to-day default setting. I think a former teammate called it, you know, Javi is unapologetically Javi himself all of the time. And for the vast majority of that time, that is an amazing, great skill to have as a baseball player, because the game, there's so much failure baked into that. And, you know, I'm not surprised that he was honest, because he's someone who says what he thinks, and that is much appreciated. But I'm kind of surprised that it really bothers him that much. And I'm not trying to absolve him from it or blame other players or blame the Mets culture. But that was kind of out of character for him. And then just my final thought, I have no problem with kids in the clubhouse. I think it's great that, you know, at least pre-COVID, you know, players and coaches who travel all the time and have, you know, very absurd demands on their time and have to spend a lot of time away from home, I think it's great that kids can do that. You know, whether it was like Brandon Hyde's kid, you know, playing catch with Rizzo, awesome. Do that all the time. Just don't bring your kids into the interview room. Hopefully Zooms go away at some point, but it's just not, that did not sit well with me, because when you say something like that, like, that's just there forever. It's Javi and his son. And I, if I was, you know, the media relations director or, you know, someone in there, I'd be like, dude, just leave your kids off this. You know, it's 5 minutes. They can go wherever they want, whenever they want the rest of the time. But, you know, just kind of own that yourself. That would be my kind of inside journalism point.
Then we wouldn't have those great moments of, like, wasn't there like a Steph Curry thing with his kid being hilarious?
Yeah, Steph Curry, but it's usually more, I think Sully referenced, you know, Dusty Baker used to do that a lot too.
Oh, yeah,
it just doesn't.
Well, what you don't want is you don't want it to be there.
Go viral for the wrong reason and your kid's sitting there.
Yeah, well, and you don't want it to be like where it's as if you're offering your kid as a shield, right? Like, where it's like, hey, oh, I got my kid with me. You know, I do get that. I got to bring mine in here with me on the podcast sometimes. So I got an excuse. Hey, guys, take it easy. I got my kid with me.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, so I want to stick with the Javi stuff just for a moment, less the thumbs down part of it, but that now some of the more Cubs adjacent things and market stuff. I believe it was Buster Olney that tweeted this, but there were other folks that sort of offered this sentiment, questioning to what extent Baez's remarks on this would impact his upcoming free agency. I'll let you guys respond to that because I'm going to guess we're all three on the same page about that. But I want to add to that a note that as I think about, and I'm not playing armchair psychologist, I'm not making any claims, I'm just noting this fact that, you know, we know that Javi and the Cubs were getting close might be the wrong word. They were on the path toward an extension, perhaps before the pandemic hit. It was probably going to be for a substantial sum of money. There were multiple reports from multiple different outlets to that effect. Then the pandemic hits. And then the pandemic season happens and there are struggles. And now this season happens and, you know, Javi's not performing as the guy he was 2 years ago. Still a lot of value there. We'll talk about what that looks like, what the shape is with a guy like Javi, but it's not what he was 2-3 years ago. And so I always wonder, without making any claims, to what extent a guy who's now been traded sort of is an opportunity to kind of change the story of the season. It didn't go well right away. He was dealing with the back issue again. That's got to get in your head that, like, I'm approaching my first free agency. Damn it. I had this huge opportunity that was so close. It wasn't able to lock it down. Now what's going to happen? People are talking about how I might have to sign a 1 year. How could that not get in your head? I just don't know how it couldn't. And I think that is another, that to me is a more compelling element of this renewed focus on Javi Baez and his market than about this thumbs down bullshit. I don't really see, well, I'll leave that to you guys to remark on this situation as it relates to Javi's impending free agency.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the thumbs down stuff only impacts his ability to re-sign with the Mets. It's probably annoyed Steve Cohen, and he probably, you know, is ready to say, like, after this season, we'll move on and you know, you can find another home. I'd be surprised if the Mets are going to, you know, give him a big multi-year contract. I assume they're going in another direction and Cohen will spend his money elsewhere. But I don't see how that impacts him really in other places, especially with the Cubs. They know him. They have a history with him. I think the bottom line are the numbers. If he was performing right now and saying, you know, I'm booing the fans would be like, well, we haven't booed you because you have a, you know, 140 weighted runs created plus with us, but he has a 92 weighted runs created plus with them. So they're going to boo him. And he's made some big base running errors and they're finally seeing with their eyes how he does sometimes look bad in at bats. That's just who Javi is. And then the next at bat, he'll hit a 450 foot home run. That's just,
I forgot. I have to remark, did you see the video of the swing and miss?
It made
the rounds.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, it was a little hilarious. After you listen to this, if you haven't seen it, go find it. You'll see it. Just type in like Javi swing and miss. And it was not helped by the angle and the slow motion that was added to it, but it was perhaps the most egregious missed swing I've ever seen from a professional batter. It's just Javi sometimes.
It was straight up like guessing, from what it looked like, if I'm remembering how it looked, it was like straight up guessing fastball, right? And it was breaking ball. Yeah.
Like guessing 100 mile an hour fastball and he got like a 65 mile an hour change up.
Yeah, it was rough. But no, I don't think his market is going to be dictated by his performance on the field. Like one silly comment, this isn't a makeup issue. I've seen comments about people like this guy doesn't work hard or he's a bad clubhouse guy. That stuff's not true. I've never what Patrick said about like Javi is Javi and he'll be himself. Like that isn't the way I've taken it is like that isn't like people ripping on Javi. That's just like Javi, things brush off of Javi quickly. He's able to quickly like bounce back from anything negative and go out the next day and perform or the next at bat or the next inning. Like that's who he is. And it's a rare personality. It's a personality you need to succeed in this game. So I don't see it impacting his market. I do think that we've talked about this a lot. The Cubs are going to be searching for undervalued players that slip through the cracks. 1 year deals, those are the short term deals. don't look for the 6-7 year deal this offseason, and don't also just let them off the hook and say that they can't spend. It's going to be a middle ground here. They're going to spend, and they're going to be looking for these types of deals. Javi looks primed to be a guy that lasts too long in the market, ends up taking a 1-year deal to try and rebuild the value. I'm not saying that it will happen with the Cubs, but it makes sense. It certainly makes sense. They have a relationship. He knows he can succeed here. He knows who he can work with. I don't know for sure if they just want to move on from that type of swing and miss and that type of chase and just put together a different offense. But, you know, this elite defender, great base runner, works well with David Ross. It makes sense to a certain degree if it's going to come at a 1-year deal and he's looking to build his value back up.
Yeah, I mean, the Mets are so concerned about their fans' feelings that they were in on Trevor Bauer until the last minute this offseason, and that's setting aside Bauer's current legal crisis. It would be his just repeated pattern on social media and how he treated people who didn't agree with him or kind of look and act like him. So I think the Steve Cohen tweet was something we wrote about a couple of weeks ago, where it's like, all right, this owner's not gonna be pounding the table for Javi. It was probably already a long shot because of Lindor's contract, but you think maybe New York brings out the best in Javi. He loves playing with Lindor. That's kind of out the window at this point, but there's no doubt that Chicago would be a soft landing spot. It's what we talked about, I think, just a couple days ago on the last episode before all this broke, whether it was Story or a Marcus Semien type deal, that, you know, Chicago and the Cubs helped Javi earn 7 figures through endorsement and marketing opportunities. Now, that's not going to make up what we think they were talking about before the pandemic, but it's not insubstantial either in terms of trying to make him somewhat whole and giving him a platform to where, you know, he could play 150 games and play shortstop. And I think the Cubs would probably recognize that this might be a somewhat humbled version of Javi, and that it did not go unnoticed last year during the pandemic when there was nothing else going on and the Cubs had all night games and they were absolutely drilling down on their defensive fundamentals. They won a team gold glove and Javi won a gold glove, and something has been, you know, kind of off. I haven't checked his errors recently, but they were, I think, about 20 by the time they traded him, and it was really kind of out of character for Javi. So I think, you know, Chicago is probably an ideal place to rebuild it and maybe even stay, and maybe we just have to recalibrate. It's not, you know, Javi like global superstar, but Javi as a really valuable player in a lot of different ways, just surrounded with different players who might cover for some of his weaknesses a little better.
Okay, not entirely leaving Javi Baez, because he will attend to this conversation. Oh, by the way, if the Cubs do want to do like a, you know, pillow contract for him, if that works for everybody, not eligible for a qualifying offer because of the midseason trade. So that's a nice bonus for a team that almost certainly is not going to want to part with draft picks if they don't have to this offseason on short-term deals, particularly because that second rounder, which is what they would lose, is going to be a very high second rounder. That's a tease. I got an article I'll be writing about that one at Bleacher Nation. Okay, so left side of the infield. Let's imagine a world where the Cubs do re-up with Javi short-term. Are you any more or less comfortable with the idea that the third baseman in that situation then might be Patrick Wisdom? And you're talking about 2 of your 8 regular positional guys being the, the capital V, the 2 most extreme swing and miss guys in baseball this year. Like literally 1 and 2. Does that give you any pause? Or is it like, it's 2 guys and everyone else can be contact oriented? Well, except Wilson, but, you know, like I question if it, I don't know. Can you have 2 guys like that in your lineup and it's not this serious hurdle to overcome, self-imposed hurdle to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, immediately once I knew we were going to start talking about this, and then we were just talking about Javi and the swing and miss, I'm like, wait a minute. If we're going to talk about wisdom and Javi on the left side of the infield, I'm not so sure that that works. That's, you know, that's a lot of strikeouts between those two guys. I know a lot of power and good defense. It makes it significantly tougher to swallow. I do think just on wisdom, yeah, he's, I mean, it's hard not to notice what he's doing. It's hard not to wonder what, you know, what he is beyond this season. He's clearly taken this opportunity and run with it. This isn't Schwindel or even Ortega. Ortega's kind of hit a lull, right? And Schwindel is just like, what, we're 3 weeks now, a month, I guess. Sorry, time is flying, I guess. But yeah, it's been a full month for Schwindel. I mean, it's great to see those guys succeed, but this is 3 months, still not a ton of time, right? I mean, Kosuke Fukudome basically did 3 months of performing at an all-star level and then kind of fell off. The league can still adjust. I mean, September isn't going to tell us too much outside of a collapse, right? So I don't like jumping all in on guys like this. He's 30 already. You can say that next year is his age 30 season, but he's done enough, barring a collapse in September, to say like they're going to give him a chance, right? In some position. I don't think you can go into next year, go into the offseason saying this guy has this position locked down, right? But you can say Patrick Wisdom looks like he's likely part of our 26-man roster outside of something crazy happening where someone says like, hey, we're going to give you a prospect, really nice prospect that you like for Patrick Wisdom or something like that, right? Outside of anything weird happening, I just think, yeah, he's locked down a spot on the roster. What that role is, what he does, I don't think you can define that now, nor should they. They shouldn't be doing things like that. They have way too many holes on the roster, and you don't want to close off an avenue to improve the team in any way. So you have to be creative. You have to be thinking outside the box. But Patrick Wisdom, I'm impressed with what he does. I expected it to cool down. It does at times, but he seems to bounce back. He has a great attitude, seems to work his butt off. He has the pedigree. We all know this. He was a first-round pick or a supplemental first-round pick, I believe. It's just taken some time. This happens. You'd love it if he was 4 years younger, but this is his reality, and I think, you know, ride it as long as you can.
Yeah, I think what we're talking about here is not like handing them the keys to the kingdom. Like Javi, you're not signing up for the next 10 years to make Javi the face of your franchise and like your number three hitter. Like maybe Javi's more of like a seven hitter and, you know, kind of a, you'd be wanting him at shortstop, but you know, the way he roved around, it was kind of, this hybrid player for the Cubs at the beginning of his career was really interesting too. And, you know, with Wisdom, you have nothing to lose. I mean, what's he going to make, like $600,000 next year? And that, to your point, it's not penciling him as the third baseman for the next 5 years and like giving him a David Bode extension. It's maybe you sign a guy like Chris Taylor who can move around, and maybe Nico is also kind of a super utility type and not a guy that you're penciling in at shortstop when he's had so much trouble staying healthy and staying on the field for so long. So I think it's really hard to ignore Wisdom. I mean, just looking what he's done, I mean, putting up home runs and watching him day to day, he's way more athletic than you'd think. You know, as David Ross said, he's not some one dimensional guy, and he's not like a, like side of saying, he's not some 20th round pick. I mean, when the Cardinals pick you that high, you usually wind up having a pretty good career. So I don't see the, I think with all of these guys, it's what else are they going to do? How are they going to surround them? And whether or not they can find good pitchers, is that's kind of what it comes down to me too. Like they, those guys can put up some numbers and be valuable in different ways, even if they're striking out a ton. But if the Cubs don't fix the pitching, like there's really no point. You know, it's, we'll see you at the trade deadline next summer.
Cubs can get another great prospect from the Mets at the deadline for Javi. No, I think that all rings very true. And I think very much like Javi Baez, the thing that you like about a guy like Wisdom is that he's not one-dimensional. I think you had in your piece, Patrick, there, the quote from David Ross about that, that, you know, he does do the other things well. And that creates, you know, a considerably higher floor than you're used to seeing from like a hulking slugger, a huge strikeout guy. Like, yeah, Wisdom has that. But, you know, his profile is just so interesting to me, too, because his huge strikeout rate is almost entirely based on a very specific hole at the top of the zone against fastballs. He has the lowest contact rate in the zone in baseball. And otherwise, he has excellent plate discipline. Like, he's not up there swinging at a ton of pitches out of the zone. Like, he has really good pitch recognition. He knows the strike zone. It's just that his swing is designed in such a way that, like, you know, a well-executed fastball in the upper third is probably going to get by him. Maybe he closes a bit of that in the future. Maybe not. But, man, you know what crazy thing it got me thinking about? And if someone wants to take this idea, if someone's listening to this, they want to take this and run with this and do... I don't even know what the research would look like. I might be crazy, but that's why we have the podcast. I'm allowed to say crazy things, and it's not really there forever because it's just like the, you know, it's just the four of us talking. Isn't it possible if you were a guy who could absolutely obliterate consistently pitches in the middle third and bottom third, okay? Especially fastballs. You never miss. You know, guy makes a mistake there, you crush it, okay? In the upper third, you never hit it. You constantly miss. But then above the strike zone, you lay off. You never swing. Okay? So you've got great plate discipline. You just can't hit that upper third. Isn't it possible that your swing and miss in the upper third is actually just bait? It's just bait. Because unless a pitcher does execute, which they don't every time. Okay? If they go above the zone, he takes it. No problem. If they go a little bit below the upper third, boom. Dong City. I'm just saying. It's almost like his scouting report is making it so pitchers are like, I can get this guy. I just have to throw it here. Ah, shit. I was a little too low. And then your neck's turning because he just sent one 460 feet out. I don't know. It's almost, I've never studied a guy with that level of extreme in terms of like good discipline, but gaping hole at the top of the zone and then just hammer city everywhere else. It's fascinating. I think, I don't know. It may play.
Are you suggesting that he's by swinging and missing, he knows he's baiting pitchers into
conscious. No. I'm saying that his naturally occurring profile has turned into bait because it's like every single pitcher knows how to beat him. Like, it took 2 weeks and everyone knew exactly how to beat him. And yet he's still striking out just as much and still hammering the ball just as much. And like I said, it's rare that you have that combination of enough discipline for this to work. Because if you don't have enough quality plate discipline, the strikeout rate's going to continue to climb because pitchers can get you to extend more and more and more and more.
So we
build off of it.
So just like going off last podcast when we talked about, I'm not sure if Patrick was still around for this, but we just talked about the unique platoons that the Giants use and how it's about where pitchers are located more than like lefty-righty matchups. That right there is a perfect situation. Oh, yeah. You have a guy like that can execute,
a pitcher that can't locate,
execute that. Well, yeah. If the guy can execute it, Wisdom sits and Nico plays third and whatever. You know, whatever. I'm just throwing it out there. You whoever you sign that can hit the high fastball is at third, or someone else is at third, and that person that usually sits is in the lineup that can hit the high fastball. And Wisdom plays against most other pitchers. Because it's, I mean, as much as that's become the game, high fastball and chase breaking ball, like, it's still hard to execute that high fastball. It's not like everybody
think about, we used to talk about Yu Darvish, who's like one of the best pitchers in the game. And it was an issue for him that like the best version of his fastballs were always down. Like, that was just where he felt the best executing. He felt he could do the most. And whenever you would look at his makeup and you're like, oh man, if he could just locate at the top of his zone, he would own guys. Well, that just wasn't his game. He just wasn't able to do that well. And so you might, I love it. I love this conversation. You might see a matchup like that and you're like, ah, you know, Wisdom against a great fastball pitcher. I don't know if that's a good matchup. Ah, but his better work is down. His misses are down, you know, whatever it might be. Maybe it's a guy who can locate well at the top of the zone, but he has just a sort of higher rate of misses down. Yeah. Just saying. There's a little something here. You're welcome, Cubs. You're welcome. You take that, you run with it. You plug it into Ivy, you do what you needed to do, and you know, Wisdom will be the first 400 strikeout, 100 homer guy next year, because they will just perfect this thing. He's either going to strike out or he's going to homer. Done. Done deal.
Our you got offense anything else? Broke. Brett fixed yeah. it.
Our offense
That's
broke.
Theo somewhere.
So we found some guy to break it even more, and we broke it so bad that suddenly it worked again. It's great. All right. Good talk, gentlemen. I give this one 2 solid thumbs down, which, of course, is a good thing. Thank you, folks, for listening. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor. You can catch my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get their stuff at The Athletic. Rate and review. Give us the thumbs up in the reviews. Okay, the thumbs down thing doesn't work if you do it there. That actually hurts us. So don't do that. Unless you want to boo us, in which case we'll get on the next episode later this week and we'll boo you right back. I'll kick off the episode with just lusty boos. So thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Goodbye.